Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Inside China Tech. I'm Zen Su, a tech reporter with the South China Morning Post, and I am finally back from the US, from CES. So yeah, welcome back to a new episode. Today we are going to talk about the Hong Kong startup scene. And today with me, I have two very special guests. I have Emma Young from Timeless, who basically created an app for Alzheimer's patients to connect with their loved ones. And I also have with me Yuwen Ding, who is the CEO of Lumos, a smart helmet startup based in Hong Kong. So hey, Emma.
Hey, everyone. This is Emma from Timeless.
And Yuwen.
Hey, everyone. This is Yuwen here. Great to be here.
Cool. We will dive right into it. So for those of you who don't know, Emma from Timeless is kind of like a really unique startup entrepreneur because she is 14 years old and she has already, you know, been running Timeless for like 2 years. So Emma, tell us a little bit about Timeless, like what inspired you to create Timeless at the age of 12? And yeah, tell us a little bit about the story.
Sure. I actually started coding when I was really young, but it started really as like a hobby. Like I'd play around with it when I was around like six. I got on Scratch, which is like this block by block programming app. And I kind of started from there developing games and like websites. And then eventually when I was 11, actually, I had just moved to the States and I came across a competition called the Technovation Challenge, which is a technology entrepreneurship competition that encourages girls to pursue STEM. So my best friend and I actually entered that competition and we developed an app actually for concussions. And from then, I kind of realized, you know, how impactful technology can be. And I really wanted to kind of create something that could help my grandmother, who actually has Alzheimer's. Because when she was around 7 or 8, she was out kind of forgetting my birthday and then forgetting what she has for dinner. So I wanted to create something that could help people like her kind of stay connected with her family. And so I created Timeless when I was around 12 years old. I created like first a working prototype, and I kind of built up from there, building my team and finding people to collaborate with me. And so now I'm actually almost about to launch Timeless. We're in the testing phase right now. So I'm really excited right now.
Cool. Yeah, that's a really, really great story. You said you started coding when you were about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Was this like out of your personal interest?
Yeah, my dad actually is based in the tech field and he kind of showed me kind of computers and kind of playing around with those. And I kind of just started as like, you know, playing around at home, kind of as a game. And then it kind of built up from there.
Very cool. Okay, so we'll come back to you in a bit, Emma. Now on to you. And so you and I know that you are Singaporean and you've spent some time in the US, but you have started Lumos in Hong Kong. So tell us a little bit about how you started Lumos and why you picked Hong Kong as a base.
Sure. And well, thanks for having me, first of all. Great to be here. And my product's actually very visual, so it's interesting to have to explain it in a podcast. But it's a bicycle helmet. That looks like a regular bicycle helmet by day, but we've integrated a whole bunch of smart electronics and technology into it. And basically, you just turn it on and you find that you've got your lights in the helmet integrated with you. So you get bright white lights in the front, bright red lights in the back, and we give you a remote that goes to your handlebar, which you can use to activate left and right turn signals. And it also senses when you're slowing down and activates a brake light. So all the signals and features you've come to expect from a car, and we take it into the most vulnerable member of the road, the cyclist. And because it's on your head, it's just naturally higher and more conspicuous. You're much more likely to not forget to bring your lights with you and all of those good things.
So how did you come up with the idea of creating Lumos? Like why create a smart bike helmet when, you know, like for years and years, people were just using regular bike helmets?
Right. It really is, I guess, sort of similar to Emma, right? We're going through life and we experience a problem and then we're like, why can't there be a better, there has to be a better solution out there. And so I was a cyclist in Boston. If you're not familiar with Boston at the time, Boston drivers were rated or voted like the worst drivers in America, meaning like super aggressive, very intimidating. But the cyclists are Bostonian too, so they're also like intimidating. And it got dark really early, and I was forgetting my lights all the time. Or I'll leave it at home, or I'll leave it on my bike, it'll get stolen. And this is very frustrating. And then I'll have to ride at night without lights. And I just realized after a while that that's really dangerous. And so that's where the idea for Lumos came, like, hey, why can't I integrate the two together? It'll be a lot simpler. It'll be a lot more elegant. And it was nothing more than that. It's just an idea. I met the person who would become my co-founder there. We spent a weekend hacking together the ugliest prototype you could imagine. And the surprising thing was that as ugly as it was incredibly functional, and people would keep stopping us while we were riding around with it, asking us questions like, wow, what is that? Where can I get one? How much is it? You know, all sort of indicating real interest. And so we wanted to build it.
So originally when you were building the prototype, this was like for your own use? Like were you originally thinking of already creating this product, or was it just, you know, for yourself at the time?
It was really just two kind of nerdy engineers who liked building stuff just for the fun of building it. And we didn't really have much ambitions of like, oh, where could this go? What could it become? It was just us scratching an itch, and there was nothing more than that, you know, in the early days. Yeah.
So the idea to turn it into a business came when you got like a lot more, when you realized that like people on the streets were asking about it, you realized you could turn that into like a real product?
Or? Well, one of my dreams had always been to do a Kickstarter campaign. Like I had seen other companies do it. I had met an entrepreneur that ran a very successful Kickstarter campaign, and this made so much sense to me, right? That you would build something with a community of early adopters who really believe in your products, and you would build something that would not otherwise exist. This doesn't make that so much sense. I was like, wow, how does this process work? I really want to do it. Not so much to build a successful business per se, just to like learn what that was like. And so it had always been one of my dreams. And so I was like, you know, I want to build something. This is really catered very well for the Kickstarter community, so it seems like a perfect opportunity. I'll just try and do it. And if it's successful, great. And if it's not successful, well, I'll have learned something. It's not a big deal.
Great. So Emma, tell us a little bit more about Timeless. Like, what are the features of Timeless, and who are your target users, and how it works?
Sure. So Timeless includes four core features. One of them is updates, where you basically see a stream of photos sent by your family and friends, and then the patient actually sees these labels on each of those photos. And that is actually AI-based facial recognition that goes in and looks at each of those photos and sees where the faces are and tags those people, so that when the patient's going through, they can say, oh, this is, say, Emma, my granddaughter. And so the next one is also photos, where you can see all of those photos grouped by person. There's contacts, where you can, it's like a picture phone book, and you can just tap call or text to text someone, so you don't have to remember any phone numbers. And the most unique one is actually identify. So you use the camera on your phone to take a picture of a person, whether it's in real life or it's in a physical photo, and you don't remember that person. You take a picture of it, it'll tell you who that is. So my target audience is, you know, the families of Alzheimer patients and even dementia patients. And I actually got a lot of interesting feedback from that, because when I was first starting, I had a really, really basic prototype. And I went and entered these like tech competitions and like competitions for kind of kids science projects. And a lot of people were saying, wow, you know, I wish I had this when, like, you know, my family member was going through this, or, you know, I have a family member who would love to use this right now. And I kind of realized really the power of what I had just created.
Yeah, so I'm kind of curious, because obviously with this app, it's also for the patient to use, right? Like say if they don't remember who somebody is, they can look through photos and see like, this is my son or this is my granddaughter. So, but that, I guess, also requires some kind of familiarity with technology. And I guess Alzheimer's patients usually tend to be on the older side. Mm-hmm. Like, have you experienced any sort of problems with getting them to sort of use the app?
I think right now, you know, based on purely the kind of feedback I get online and with actual people that I meet, a lot of the time they say, you know, my family member kind of uses technology a little bit, or if you introduce this earlier, which is I'm trying to kind of advocate for, you know, people kind of finding these tools earlier in the process, kind of in the early stages, kind of adopting to using an app, using a mobile phone. I think it really can be kind of learned into really a lifestyle that can kind of really help them to slow down the cognitive decline or keep in touch with their family and friends.
So you mentioned that there's some artificial intelligence sort of technology in that. Did you create that by yourself? Like, did you, you know, from start to end, you created the entire app on your own?
That the facial recognition part is actually part of an API that is developed by a company that based in Miami. They're a startup called Kairos, and they actually, in the beginning, when I was trying to find a tech mentor or advisor, I actually found them online when I was looking for, you know, AI startups. And I'm really grateful because their CTO actually was agreed to kind of be my advisor and also for them to sponsor me. So I've been actually using this API to power that basis.
Very cool. So a question for the both of you. What are the sort of challenges that you guys face trying to create your own app or your own company?
I guess I can go first. I mean, it's a long list. I think being part of a community of people who are also, you know, everything's a struggle, and being able to like share the experiences and share notes on how you're tackling different things, it's super helpful. So being what I find for me personally is being close to other entrepreneurs, both trading tips and tricks, but also like just like emotional. So emotional community is super helpful. And of course, finding good people, like ultimately it's the team that executes like whatever we do. So, you know, having a good idea is great. The execution obviously is what really separates you from everyone else. And that's down to like who you got. So finding great people is like a never ending challenge. We're always on the lookout for good people.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And also kind of, I started this quest to find a team when I was around 12 years old. And, you know, when you reach out to someone over email that you've never met before, you don't really know if that's even the right email. And they're like, oh, I'm 12. Can you please help me? Mm-hmm. You know, definitely my age in the beginning was a different and still is really an obstacle on a lot of fronts. You know, finding funding, designing, development, you know, it's been a challenge to find that team. But, you know, I'm really grateful that, you know, out of that struggle has come this team of people who really support me and really believe in what I do. And really want are they out there to help me.
Your company's based in the US?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a particular reason why you picked the, like, was it because you live there now and so?
Yeah, I am myself live in New York City, but actually, you know, I have a team from like all over the place. You know, my designer used to be from Texas, now lives in California. Kairos is the startup, the facial recognition startup. They're based in Miami. I'm collaborating with a developer. He's actually based out of Cologne, Germany. So it's really like a international team.
How difficult is it to sort of like, because you have your team members are all over the world. How do you sort of coordinate and work together if everyone's in sort of different time zones?
Yeah, I mean, I actually in the beginning kind of started coordinating with them separately. You know, when I started the design part, I kind of talked to them, my designer, and then now I'm mainly collaborating with my developer. So, and I myself am doing a lot of the work as well. So it's really a collaborative process. We've been, you know, connecting over email and, you know, Skype calls. So it's been a crazy process, but, you know, in the end, we find a way to make it work.
I mean, not to mention she's doing it while going to school.
Is that difficult to sort of balance, like, what you're doing with Timeless with your schoolwork?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I go to school, you know, everyone's doing, you know, something. So, I mean, I don't feel that, you know, what I do out of my peers is, like, really weird. I mean, we're all going up late nights and stuff. But
once again, you said you're going to a school where everybody is doing something like on the side, like everyone has sort of like a pet project.
Yeah, I mean, like
what is this school where 14-year-olds are?
That wasn't my school.
I mean, I you know, I'm really lucky to have friends who, like, you know, some people do like science research and some of them are doing really great, like they're fencing and math competitions. And I feel like, you know, part of that, you know, group of people, of young people who are passionate about something, and we really go and tackle that. And you know, balancing that with school, and you know, all of us are doing, you know, projects outside of school that, you know, require us to go, you know, we're 10 p.m., 11 p.m., we're still going. So, you know, it's been a difficult process to balance at school, but, you know, really grateful for what's come out of it.
That's great. So, Ewan, tell us a little bit about why you decided to base your company in Hong Kong.
Sure, yeah, I get the question a lot. And it's basically because, well, I worked at a hardware startup before, and we did it in a place that didn't really make sense. It's a long story, but we did it from India. And it was a huge challenge. And one of my huge takeaways from that experience was, if you're building great hardware, you really need to be a place that builds great hardware. And if you try to do it from somewhere else, no matter where it is, whether it's the Bay Area, anywhere in the US, or really anywhere outside of like this Shenzhen area, like it's you're asking for trouble. And so when we had the idea, we did the early prototypes in Boston. Once we figured out, okay, this is, you know, pretty much what we need, this is what it's going to look like, then I came here and to find a factory and get it all set up. And that, I think, in retrospect, was like a great decision. Like, I'm not sure we could have done it anywhere else, anywhere in the world. And so that's why, and at the same time, not just proximity to the manufacturers, but you know, we needed a place that had access to Google and Facebook. We sell predominantly to the US and to Europe, and those are tools that we use like every day, all the time. So we have to have great access to it. So Hong Kong really does serve as that perfect place where it's very well connected to the world in all, in not just the internet, but the way of doing business. People here are very cosmopolitan. I can get around with English really easily. And at the same time, China is a day trips away. It's and I go there all the time. So that balance is like phenomenal. There's literally nowhere else I could have done that.
So you travel between Hong Kong and Shenzhen pretty often. Like you're like the factory that makes the helmets are in Shenzhen.
Yep, that's right.
Is it difficult being a startup in Hong Kong? Because, you know, very often, like what I hear from other startups is that, you know, Hong Kong generally is still like a city that is very focused on traditional industries, mm-hmm. and, you know, people generally still want to be investing in like property or like that kind of stuff, stock markets. So is it difficult for startups based in Hong Kong to sort of look for funding from Hong Kong investors or in this region? Or how do you sort of solve that kind of like funding challenges or investing challenges?
Well, I feel like Hong Kong has a like super interesting heritage because Hong Kong used to have strong manufacturing, used to have like strong textile manufacturing, plastics manufacturing. So there's a whole class of people here who have that history. They don't do it anymore, but they are familiar with those industries, and actually like they're not really afraid of it. So I would say it's easier than I thought, to be honest. It's never easy, but it was a lot easier than I thought. In contrast to like, you know, sort of where I grew up in Singapore, I feel like there is actually a lot more energy in Hong Kong, a lot more hustle, a lot more maybe a lot more ambition. I'm not sure if that's a good thing to say.
No, it's fine. I mean, I sort of understand that kind of like, you know, Hong Kong is very vibrant city, and you know, it always feels like people are hustling. Mm. So that's definitely very cool. Emma, so you know, with your app, you said that you're ready to launch it, but like in terms of prototypes, have you used it with your grandmother, and like how has it changed your relationship with her, or has it improved like interactions generally?
Yeah, I mean, the app, I've showed her kind of earlier versions and kind of told her what I'm doing. You know, she is like Chinese speaking, so, and right now the app is in English, so I had to kind of explain it to her. But yeah, I've showed it to her and she thought it was a great idea. I mean, it's quite similar to what we're doing right now. We have like this whiteboard at home with all these phone numbers and stuff, and we have an iPad that she uses to look at photos. But I think that, you know, with her, I think I'm really hoping that, you know, what I do with her can really translate to other families as well, because we always had a really close relationship. She basically, you know, raised me when I was younger. And so, you know, I hope to really be, this app is able to kind of cherish those relationships and really kind of sustain those memories.
What kind of advice do you have for your peers who might also be interested in creating an app or starting a company in Hong Kong?
I think really perseverance. You know, there are so many people out there who are, you know, interested in the tech sector, who are, you know, really kind of looking for like the next big thing. And I think that, you know, as long as you really get out there, put yourself out there, say like, this is my idea and I'm really passionate about this, you know, who's, you know, on board, who's going to get behind. And so you kind of find that team of people, even though, you know, the process can be long. People sometimes kind of turn you down. You know, I've had, you know, VCs who kind of refer me to science fairs and say like, why don't you put it online and see what happens? And I think that, you know, if you really kind of look out there and see who can I can put on my team, that's really, you know, the first step going forward.
What about you, Yuan? What kind of advice do you have for, you know, people who are trying to start companies in Hong Kong or start their entrepreneurship journey here?
I'm just listening to Emma's like, I'm so amazed. Like, yeah, she's right. It's like, that's really good advice. Man, but I mean, it's these truisms, right? Just finding that core passion, finding something to really believe in. If you don't, what I found, if you don't believe it in yourself, then you cannot inspire in someone else. You cannot inspire in someone else. You're not going to create that following. You're not going to create that business. So it's like, people say over like all the time, but I think it's because it's true. You have to find a reason for believing in what you're doing. If you can't find it, you know, maybe that's the first thing to work on.
So what are your thoughts about the Hong Kong tech scene? Because I know you hang out with probably a lot of entrepreneurs in the city, and you know people, and sort of what's the sense you get about the Hong Kong sort of innovation and entrepreneurship scene? Because a lot of people often also say like, you know, like Hong Kong startups, like, you know, and they're in a city where there's no market, or like maybe there's a lack of talent, or because people still want to become bankers or like lawyers and stuff. Mm. So what do you think about these sort of entrepreneurs that you've seen, and like just the general scene?
Well, I mean, my exposure is limited. I have a handful of entrepreneurs that I definitely hang out with, and all of us are still alive, so that says a lot. so vibrant in the sense that we're hanging on, and we're still alive, so that's pretty okay, all things considered. I was just at the Tech Lifestyle Conference yesterday, which was actually phenomenal. There were some really great speakers who came in. There was a good community of startups and attendees. I was actually like kind of blown away by that conference. It was like really, really high quality. So like the players are here, like people are doing stuff.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, earlier you mentioned that you have like your classmates are doing, they all have sort of like their side projects, or they're doing something else outside of school. So it's really led me to thinking, is there a teenage tech scene in Hong Kong or anywhere else in the world basically?
You know, speaking from more of a US perspective, you know, that's where I've really based Timeless. I think that there is like a growing almost group of people, or even if I could say a movement of people, of young people who, because of the internet, social media, you know, what we see on TV, of young people who are kind of stepping up and saying, here's my idea, and like, I really want to make this. And a lot of people are actually getting out there and saying, cool, like, here's the money, go make it. And there are people, there's a group of people who are really, you know, on YouTube, who are making videos, who are actually making products and apps, who are out there, you know, building companies and products, and they're, you know, teenagers like myself, you know, Hillary Yip in Hong Kong. I know a bunch of people over like Twitter and different campaigns that I've done in the US, all over the States, who are, you know, launching products. And I think it's really cool because, you know, we are, you know, the leaders of tomorrow. And if we can get our voices out there when we're teenagers, that really shows how much, you know, the internet and the technology has really been able to kind of empower kids and empower people who have ideas from all walks of life and from all ages.
So what's next for the both of you? What's next for Timeless?
So next up, well, I'm launching soon. And then from then, I'm really hoping to, you know, collect feedback, see what people say, see, you know, what gets out there and kind of work on there. You know, I'm also planning out phase two, you know, adding more features, like, you know, adding music and gamification and even translating it. I actually unexpectedly got a lot of, you know, international traction for some reason. A lot of people in Spain actually picked it up, and in China and in Mexico. So I'm really hoping to, you know, get Spanish versions out there, Chinese versions out there, because there's obviously, you know, a target market beyond the US. So really trying, those are the next steps.
All right, Emma Yang, Yuan Ding, it's been great having you with us in the studio today. If we want to find out more about you guys, where can we find you?
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm at EmmaYang78, and you can also find Timeless's website at timeless.care.
We are Lumos Helmets. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have a WHub account as well. If you just Google that, you'll find all of us, all of those sites. Lumos, as in like that Harry Potter spell that lights up your wand.
Very cool. So I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, Lumos's new product, as well as Timeless's app when it launches. Otherwise, again, I am Zen Su. If you would like to follow me on Twitter, I am at Zen Su, and definitely go to scmp.com/tech. That's where we post all of our great tech content. So definitely check us out. And I will see you next week. Bye.
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 Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.